Welcome back to At the Devil's Ball, where we talk about horror and horror-related films in a positive and constructive manner. I am Samuel Numene, and with me as always is my co-host and founder of the Feast, Nathaniel Johnson. How are you doing today?
What's he building in there? Everybody's going to have to bear with me. I'm a little under the weather.
Did you get bit or anything last night? Or
no.
What?
Okay.
Oh, ginger snaps, right. Okay, I'm
full disclosure. We're failing right out of the back.
People. I'm on a lot of DayQuil. And it's actually funny because I pulled myself together for a recording with Sarah Sin on her show this morning and then immediately fell apart again and was sitting there going like, I should go to the store or something. And I was like, why aren't I going to the store? But I realized I said this on her show where I could not. I had been meaning to go back to that show for a while and I kept being put off and I was like, I finally made arrangements to do it. And I was like, I can't call out sick from that.
And, yeah, that would suck.
And then this show, this is us doing something we promised to do a year ago.
Right.
And
if you need to put it off another week, we can absolutely do that. I'm not going to take advantage of the fact that you're not feeling well today.
No. That's what I mean is I was like, after a year of like being like, we were supposed to do this because I was the one that when we were talking about what to do this month, I was like, we should do what we promised to do last year. And so now we're up to the day to do it. And I get sick and I'm like, I can't call out sick from doing this because it's been a year. So
I think it was like, because it wasn't in November we were going to do.
It was originally for October. And then because it does have Halloween in it.
Right.
And then it got put off because we were going to do werewolves another month. And then that didn't happen. One of the first things.
So anyways, apologies to Jed. She's been sitting in the green room for a year.
It has been starting to get a little dusty in here, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you ran out of crackers, I think, after about 15 days.
There was a limited amount of snacks. I'm going to have to agree.
And, you know, Nathaniel never separated the brown M&Ms. So
it was wasn't my rider.
That was true. But yeah, we had said early on when we first started doing this that Jen, our guest this week, Sam's much better half.
Far better.
Better two-thirds. wanted to do Ginger Snaps with us, our movie this week. And that didn't happen, as aforementioned, for whatever reason. But
now we're here and we're doing
it. Now we're here. Yeah. We're doing Ginger Snaps.
Yay. And
Nathaniel is mostly alive. So.
I watched the movie again last night in a fog. And here I am recording on it in a fog. So everybody will have to bear with me. If I am slow on the uptake, it's because I am confused. But I'm on a lot of DayQuil. As I mentioned, I think it's working. And I'm ready to go. So,
all right. You want to hit us with the vital stats and then we'll jump in?
Yes. That's right. That's my job this week. Okay. Yeah. So Ginger Snaps was released in 2000. It was made in Canada. As you can tell by watching how many times hockey is in this movie, it's obvious.
Right.
Written by Karen Walton, with the co-story credit with John Fawcett, who is the director of the film. Starring the great Emily Perkins, who we've talked about on the show before. She was in, of course, the 1990 It as young Beverly. We talked about her a little bit in Supernatural as well, our Supernatural special.
Right.
Played Becky on Supernatural, reoccurring funny character. And of course, alongside her, a wonderful actor, Emily Perkins. Alongside her, we've got Catherine Isabel, the Scream Queen, in a ton of things. We talked about her actually not too long ago with Freddy versus Jason.
Yeah. In a small role, but memorable.
Small, memorable role. She was obviously stunt cast in that movie to be like, hey, right. It's Catherine Isabel. We got Chris Lynch as Sam. Not to be confused with Samael.
No.
We've got the wonderful Mimi Rogers as Pamela. It's my favorite part of this movie, by the way. And we'll get to that. But I love Mom in this movie. Jesse Moss as Jason. Danielle Hampton as Trina. Jean Bourgeois as Henry. And then we've got smaller role, but memorable roles as Lindsay Lease as Nurse Fairy and Pak Kwong Ho as the janitor.
Great.
Both great, very great. Small roles, but great, yeah. But have a lot of presence.
I forgot to look up who played the hockey kid in it, because this time when I was watching it, I'm like, I love this hockey kid.
Yeah.
Like, he just comes out of his house in the morning already wearing skates.
Hockey kid is Brian Bully is his name. Brian Bully. But that's
the guy who played Jason, Jesse Moss, he was in a bunch of other things too. Wasn't he in like Final Destination and some other stuff?
I think so. Yeah. He looked familiar. So did Chris Lynch.
You could be getting a false positive off of the him being kind of a Christian Slater role.
That is true. I know he was also, he did a couple of guest spots on 100 Scariest Movie Moments, which I watch like every year around this time.
That's probably,
he did a talking head during some of those. But I know he's been in other stuff, but yeah.
So, Jed, I know when we first talked about this podcast all of a year ago, which feels like a lot longer, but not because we're doing this podcast, but because that year was like the longest year in recorded history.
It's still long.
It still is.
It hasn't stopped. Yeah.
Right. Like, 2020 feels like 70 years ago, and from 2021 in January to 2021 to now, it feels like another 50 years.
Something like that.
But this was the first movie you mentioned about it, like right out of the bat. Why was that the first thing that came to your mind? Other than it's great.
Quality and excellence came first. But one of the things that really struck me the first time I watched this is that there was elements of body horror about it, which we're all kind of used to seeing people turning into monsters and it's awful. But there's a lot of body horror of just like the female experience.
Right.
And
then some of the male too, kid gets better, he starts breaking out and like you see him, he's sweating blood.
Honest to God though, like after what she's been through, like you almost kind of laugh at like when he's like, she's like, oh, you got some acne. Aww.
I mean, that guy
exactly. His is played for laughs.
Right. Like, oh, you got some acne. Well, she's about to pass out because she's lost like 2/3 of her blood volume, but that's okay.
The scariest moment in this movie, the part that's like almost the toughest to watch, and it's such a guy thing to note, but the nurse describing periods, menstruation. I'm like, I can deal with her like growing a tail, but that's like, I'm like, holy,
but that stuff's shit, dark.
Yeah. I'm like, well, the real body horror is apparently what women go through once a month. Like that's, but I didn't mean
it. And just like the looks on their faces, like, why am I 15 and 16 and nobody's told me this before?
They even
for women going through that and going through those classes in school that the boys go to the other movie.
Yeah.
They still don't get into it in as fine a detail as can happen. And it's no wonder, I just, side note, that like so many kids are so effed up about sex and those kind of things. They don't teach it to you when it's happening to you.
Yeah.
So yeah, even watching it, even having gone through these things and understanding
because we were like 20 or 21 when we saw this, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Rich is like, no, I'm like, yup.
Because this is one of the ones that I'm like, I just watched this. You need to watch this too.
Yeah. And then when I showed him that, I'm like, yeah, no, that's exactly how it goes.
Because, like 95% of body horror is made by men. And I feel like being pregnant, I mean, I realize that I'm a man and I only have my perspective. Being pregnant or having a period is the most terrifying thing in the world to me. Like, because my body doesn't agree with me at all,
Yeah,
you can't control
it. I think it's the lack of direct control is what makes this an all body horror kind of,
But it's weird there's not more women body horror movies,
Well, it's a surprise that there's not more women in horror.
Yeah.
But there you go. Yeah. Not that everybody's gonna do this particular sort of thing, but when it comes, if you break it down in percentages, if you have more women voices throughout the entire process, you're gonna get more interesting viewpoints.
Yeah.
But you're right. The scariest moments of the movie are in that nurse lady's office.
Right. Yeah, she's
in, like, the first third of the movie.
She's very graphic about what she's describing. She doesn't
smiling.
Yeah, while smiling, and, like, she almost gets, like, a perverse joy out of telling these two girls.
Your body is a nightmare.
Well, just roll with it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny
too. It sucks to be all of us.
It's funny, Sam, because I think you hit the nail on the head too when you talked about, like, body horror. You immediately mentioned pregnancy instead of menstruation. You know, like, that's the male idea of, you know, the most horrifying thing that happens to a woman's body is something I put in it. versus the actual horror body, which is menstruation. It's like you have this, is the women go through this.
Regardless if you want it or need it or not.
Yeah, it's
happening anyway.
But guys always think about it's the thing that makes their stomach distend. You know, that's the horrifying thing.
And just the fact that you know, and obviously I don't want to speak out of turn here, but, like, you know, the fact that, you know, every month you have this, like, visceral reminder that you're just an animal and you have, you know, a biological purpose that may be, you know, different than your mental or spiritual purpose.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, you know, whether you want to have kids or not, your body's like, you should be having kids.
Right. Well, I'm also not going to have 15 of them to help work the farm.
Right.
So.
Right. We're not a quiverful family.
Yeah.
Right. You know, you're not. Yeah. I mean, the concept of the animalistic notion of birth, and that is that you're going to have 15 kids and 10 of them are going to die.
Right.
So you need to have 15 of them because you have to have backups. Yeah.
Right. No, thanks.
We can't see it on video, but Layla is here because she wants to talk about how, you know, she was spayed. So
she has a different
she got a different viewpoint on it.
Yeah. But yeah, it's the nurse is like, you know, and then it will become this thick, viscous sludge that will slither out of you. And I'm like,
yeah, not things that women share with you guys often. We barely talk about it amongst ourselves.
You know, even amongst, you know, people, men who aren't, like, you know, disgusted by the whole process, or, you know, because there's guys who think that it's not masculine to even pick up pads at the store or, you know, for somebody.
Right. Yeah.
Which I always say my biggest fear of picking up pads at the store is that I'm going to get the wrong ones.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Not that somebody's gonna laugh at me for it. Like, oh yeah, I'm getting pads for my vagina. Who gives a shit? You know?
Yeah, right. It's weird.
I hope you're not referring to me as your vagina.
No, I'm saying me. Like, if this imaginary person were gonna mock me, a 44-year-old man, for buying pads at the store, like, I'm like, yeah, I fucking put them in my vagina. I don't know. What do you want?
Some people never get over high school.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what I mean. That's why I think Jason's transformation is played for laughs, and, like, the idea of, like,
just laughable from start to finish.
Sure. But the idea is, like, male puberty is kind of, you know, it gets taken maybe a little bit more seriously because it's, you know, dudes.
Right.
But in reality, we go through nothing, you know?
Yeah. We go through it once.
We grow some hair, we get some pimples. Yep. We, you know, our voice changes. We might have a few embarrassing boners here and there, but we're not.
Yeah, I gotta testify. I feel sorry for, like, the unintended boner thing.
That does suck.
That's not great. Light. Yeah. Oh, I'm not saying you don't, but I'm just saying that.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. That has to be a struggle.
Yeah. But the thing we're not leaking viscous fluid.
I'm aware.
So, yeah. So yeah, it's played for laughs, but yeah, I mean, we've kind of already, like, hit the nail on the head of a lot of what this movie is about.
Yep.
So
go ahead.
The female puberty as werewolf, or werewolf as female puberty. Although that's not all that's going on in this movie.
Right.
But it's the thing that everybody remembers it for. It's the thing that's the most pronounced, I think, in this film.
Right.
There's also a lot of talk of a lot of stuff going on in this movie about growing up, about codependency, youth and the way youth relates to people and the way people relate to youth.
And just, like, the female line of a family and how that,
right,
how their interactions may differ from, like, having both sides of the family work at the same time.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we start kind of at the beginning with, like, these two, like, you know, social outcast characters, which, you know, that's already speaking my language.
Right.
in their, you know, basically, you know, retelling their suicide pact, mm-hmm. which is that they're kind of they're definitely the spooky chicks of the school.
Yeah.
They're like the kind of goth chicks that the other goth chicks would be like, what is wrong with you?
Well, Bridget
in a lot
Bridget.
Of ways. Right.
Bridget is. I don't think Ginger really is.
I mean, you know, she's as much into the filming of death and all that stuff too. But Bridget is, you know, doesn't can't even pass. Really,
yeah.
You know.
Well, you can see at the beginning, like when you see them at school after they've handed in their work and they had some sort of class assignment and their show and their what they chose to do was just show each other in all of these like horrific deaths, suicide yeah. or death just over and over and over again, which makes for a great opening credit.
I did like when she was in the Ginger was on the fence and Bridget's taking the picture and she I can't remember what she used for it, but she's like, I can see your gooch.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'll take the picture. And that's the one where when they're showing it in class, the boys are like, can we see that one again?
Yeah.
And you can tell that she, whereas like that whole thing kind of really just kind of disgusts Bridget, that mm-hmm. Ginger is starting to kind of be like, oh, interest in boys.
Right.
That's a thing.
Or at least interest from boys.
Interest from boys, yeah.
And vice versa. Like yeah. I said, I think that she's a little less... Bridget has the line later on of I made a suicide pact. You said you'd die with me because you had nothing better to do.
Right.
You know, Bridget just is Bridget is the one who's like totally disaffected with reality. Ginger is sort of play acting, I think.
Right.
You know, Bridget secretly wants to be what they talk about is awful. You know, she right. wants to be.
And Bridget's the one who's uncomfortable at all times. Like, you can tell yeah. that she's never comfortable with herself or anything else, like, ever.
Right.
Except for, you know, maybe Ginger, her and Ginger were comfortable with each other at one point in the very close past. But it's already starting to break up at the end.
Yeah, like, you almost, I mean, it's codependency, obviously, right. but you very much get a feel of trauma bonding.
Yeah.
Like something happened that made them, you know, cling together. And now that thing is coming apart.
Right.
And I don't think that the thing that happened is just that her mom's too perky.
Right.
You think
Which
so?
She is.
I always thought that it was sort of, I get the feeling from these two. Maybe it's just that I'm a mean old man and I mm-hmm. want kids to get off my lawn, but I found them to be rather unsympathetic at the beginning. I feel like this movie begins with like two, I don't know if they actually were trauma bonding. I don't know if there's actually any trauma. I think that's just imagined trauma. Like they're kind of, they read to me as two characters who just mm-hmm. are raging against the machine because the machine is there.
Well, there's definitely some of that in there, but I mean, the way that Emily Perkins plays it, even at the beginning is like, there's a high level of, you know, like physical avoidance there, like where she cringes away from everything. Mm-hmm. And she's kind of like, you know, she's in that defensive posture that, you know, survivors of abuse often have. Now, whether that's in the script or if that's just the performance, I'm not sure.
Well, yeah, but that's that. Yeah, going down that road isn't really helpful, though. I mean, like, yeah, yeah. like, but yeah, I mean, I think Emily Perkins is giving a very physical performance,
right?
And very deliberately. I mean, as we've seen her do before, right. in other work. But no, I never really thought of it that way. So you might be onto something. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm saying that right. The way I read it was, in context of this film, they're crying wolf.
Yeah, they're also snotty kids. I mean, they're like, you know, a lot like I was at that age where, like, you know, everybody's stupid but me. And
right.
You know,
well, so I mean, I didn't like the goth.
Not kids. A good look.
I was gonna say it was your most charming feature.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I didn't like the goth kids in high school because they were, you know, if you said hi to them and they gave you a snotty, like, you know,
right, right.
Oh, and be like, well, why am I being nice to you? It's like the like Liz Lemon in 30 Rock when she goes back to her high school reunion. I don't know if you guys watched her. She was the bully the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, actually, everybody was trying to be nice to her, and she was awful the whole time. right. And she remembers it as everybody else was awful to her. Now, that's not to say that every single goth kid was like that, but you know,
I think there's a little bit of that in every kid, to be honest. Where yeah. you know, every kid thinks they're the smart one in the room, or even if it's just like my parents don't know anything, but I do.
I'm persecuted. Know. Yeah. Everybody wants to, everybody kind of wants to be persecuted a little bit, but.
And to be fair, when you see them start to interact with the other kids, you do, there is, you know, some getting ready to beat the crap out of them. And then, you know, whereas others are there just willing to use them.
Right.
So like kind of no matter where they turn, they're not seeing anybody who's given them back anything that's worth having.
It's worth noting this movie is incredibly cynical too. Like everybody is kind of awful in this movie. Like, like I said, our heroines are both kind of snotty jerks. Their parents are fairly useless, although maybe not as useless as it seems. Right. I want to get to mom here at eventually. But all the other kids are basically doing drugs. They have no sense of boundaries, no sense of proportion. The nicest people in school are kind of gleefully enjoying kind of like picking on the students. Like nobody is seems to be in a position of moral high ground in this movie. And so it's particularly the teenagers where every single one of them is either like is not particularly sympathetic, that to the point that Ginger and Bridget are by proxy the or by by process of elimination the most sympathetic teens in the
movie. Because really, I mean, there's the adults don't do anything in this film other than, you know, Mimi Rogers in the last act. They're completely ineffectual. You know, I did definitely notice this time, and I don't know if you did, Jed, or you did Nathaniel, like this movie is almost Heather's and almost
there's
not.
A lot, there's a
especially
lot
when the parents said. Come involved.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot to be said for the comparison.
Right.
You know, again, do you get a false vibe off the Christian Slater?
Well, I think it's a lot of it. I mean, it's the same feel with a different story in it, you know, in a lot of ways.
Perhaps. I don't know. I don't know if I 100% agree with that. I think there's a lot of Harold and Maude in this movie too. Just not just because of the making light of a potential suicide situation,
right?
But because they have it goes from such a dark place and it has to go through dark places to get to brighter places. Like that, I think I would say that was probably a bigger reference.
Yeah.
I would say I think Heather's is an influence here. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying it's a ripoff. I'm saying there feels like there's some DNA there with the way obviously the adults are almost played exactly the same way, where they're at best inefficient. even the ones that seem to care about things like the health teacher, you know, is fucking useless. It's not giving them any information that they really need right now.
Right.
And the fact that, you know, the stronger of the pair starts to, you know, want to kill, and the other one starts to move away from wanting to kill. You know, the kind of Christian Slater Winona Ryder thing.
Yeah.
But anyways,
is Ginger really the stronger of the pair? But that's $1 million question.
Well, I mean, in the power dynamic, yes.
Oh.
Up until the end.
Perception. Power maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's I think that there's, in the sense that, again, like we're talking about movies that are kind of inherently cynical about life, and I think Ginger Snaps definitely is. And there's a wry sense of humor to it, but it's played, it's one of the things I think that actually maybe doesn't quite work with this movie. Is I don't know if they quite balance humor and horror as well as they want to. But again, they want to is a dangerous place to go. I mean, what I guess that's where we start with what works with this movie, and I think that cynicism does mostly work. Like I said, it begins with this film with like two kids who are very very cleverly crying wolf,
right?
Which kind of points to the idea of that, you know, in reality, when this starts to happen, a doctor probably should be consulted.
Yeah.
at this point, who would believe them? You know, well, they made such a show of their macabre interests that probably nobody would buy it, even if they went to an authority, which I just thought was a clever thing. I thought it was very clever last night. I was watching, oh, they're crying wolf. I get it.
Right. Get it?
Crying wolf? The werewolf movie?
Yeah, get it? Got it.
You get it? Okay. But
then the fact that, I mean, obviously if the parents were more involved and more in tune to, you know, their daughters, like they would have been in counseling by this point.
Well,
from a couple of years, probably.
That's one of the things that I was found myself thinking last night when I was watching the movie was how heartbreaking it is. Mom wants to be involved.
Right.
They don't want her involved. And, yeah. And
she doesn't know how to be involved either.
Right. Because when they're having that conversation about how, you know, should I go talk to her? And Bridget's like, we really appreciate your hands-off approach to help us figure
out. Ginger thinks you're cool.
Ginger thinks you're cool. And then she's like,
she laughed that up really good.
But then there's a heartbreaking scene where she walks in, Ginger's in the shower, in the bathtub, like shaving her legs. And Mom walks in and she's yelling at her, get out. And Mimi Rogers does this wonderful thing with her lip. And it's I thought it was heartbreaking. I was like, oh, this poor woman, she just really wants to like bond with her daughter and her daughter.
Well, that whole interaction between Ginger and Mimi Rogers in that scene is great, because you know the mother's like, you know, starts coming to try to comfort her, and she doesn't want to be comforted. And you know, she's like, there's nothing I haven't seen before. And she's like,
it absolutely it is. Yeah,
and the thing that finally gets her to leave is yelling that she feels fat, because that's something that her mom can understand.
Yeah,
you know, she's just like, you're not fat, honey, and then she just leaves, you know.
Yeah, well, so she yells
parenting
at her,
done for the day,
right? Check.
Well, she says you're not fat, it's those magazines. And then Ginger screams, get out.
Right
She leaves. She's like, I can't do any more here. But I mean, I found we're skipping to the ending here, we're talking about Mom, but Mom figures out immediately they probably killed somebody. And her response to that is, I will burn down the house.
Right.
And we'll start a new life. What about Dad? Fuck Dad. Dad doesn't know anything.
She came up with that so fast that I cannot be convinced that isn't something she already had in her head.
Yeah. Well, you know, they were in therapy. Right. That doesn't mean everyone in therapy wants to set each other on fire.
Right.
That's right. They were going through counseling, her and Dad, who is such an ineffectual character that I think it's easy to forget he's even in it.
Right. But that's his job in it.
That's his job in it, is to make you forget that he's even in it. He figures out pretty quickly they probably killed somebody too. But
he's not to be believed.
Yeah, she says, no. It's just one of their props. But she's immediately like, oh, yeah, they totally killed somebody. But her response to that is I will burn down the house and we'll start new lives. And I'm like, Mom, that's the weirdest thing I've ever heard in a movie. It's the part that I remember. When I first watched this movie, it's one of the things that stuck out to me, because it was such an odd moment that I was like, okay, Mimi Rogers is just going to burn the house down.
And then they immediately abandon her.
Another really heartbreaking moment, I felt, that she's dragging Ginger out of the house and Mom is sort of stumbling through all this youth. And Bridget gives her that look that looks back and is like, bye, Mom. You know, it's a sad, sad moment. That I found, I was like, well, now I'm officially old because I'm identifying with the mom. but Mimi Rogers gives a great performance in this movie, and I think she's a rather heartbreaking character. I think that she really does mean well, and for especially when compared to the other adults in the film. But
and so this time when I watched it through, like last time I watched it through, I was a team mom. And I think this time through I was team Sam. Okay. Not for unstated reasons.
You should always be team Sam.
Yeah.
She's your wife, she's never team Sam, bro.
Right. She knows better.
So he's the drug dealer.
Yes. Okay.
And then the drug dealer is usually a scumbag character when it's portrayed in film. What we see with him, that the people who buy stuff from him take advantage of him as by hanging out in their truck and in his car and smoking up, which is putting him in way too much rest.
Yeah, that's the last place you want anybody smoking is where you keep your drugs.
Don't shit where you eat, guys.
At a school.
Right? At a school. You know, he ends up hitting the one werewolf with his car, and a lot of things came to light because of that.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one who kept trying to find Bridget to find out, hey, what happened? What can I do? Mm-hmm. When she tells him that she got bit as opposed to her sister, he does everything possible to assist her in getting well.
For no reason.
Regardless of him, he has no say in the game. He's got nothing for him.
Yeah.
She's even like too young for him as like an equal. At least that's the way they're playing it. Right. I don't remember how old he is personally, but they're like, she's 15.
Right.
So
and he's like, I am not interested in you like that.
Right.
which was nice. Yeah.
So even when Ginger throws herself at him, he has wants nothing to do with it. He just wants to help, you know, whoever needs to get well. And what does he get for it? Never ending amounts of bullshit. And eventually, spoilers, not making it.
Right.
Yeah.
So he was like kind of my hero. Like, he's my movie hero in this viewing. Obviously the first time through it was the girls. So I was like, hell yeah, right. Girl power, lead on everything. But like this time I'm like, that guy got screwed and all he ever was nice and nobody was good to him.
Nobody at all. No.
Even that weird chick who kept thinking she was his date.
Yeah.
It was awkward.
Well, this movie does love to throw sympathy at people that probably don't deserve it. I think to me the most shocking one of the more shocking moments of this movie is that girl, what's her name? Trina,
mm-hmm.
who is established as being a pretty awful person. But when Ginger is like slapping her on the head and like, you know, tossing her around the room, I'm like, this is when this movie starts to go to a more predatory place. And I mean, I think that even in those moments, we're kind of like, let her go, poor kid.
Right. I will say that the slapping her on the head was funny. It's every time, it's in a mean way, but she just like just keeps slapping her on the head.
Yeah, but it's the moment I think where this movie gets it starts to get uncomfortable. I think,
right.
Even though we're talking about Ginger, like, you know, slowly changing and going through all this stuff, and but it's interesting to me. I was noting this time around that I was like, okay, Ginger doesn't actually kill anybody until well into the movie. Mm-hmm. Even Trina dies technically by accident.
Right.
Ginger never actually goes there until later. She kills a dog.
Yeah. This movie hates dogs.
Had a hard time with that.
Yeah. Any movie that does that nowadays is really tough. But yeah, I mean, she doesn't. First person she kills is what, the janitor? That's the first person she actually kills.
Yeah.
And it's despite.
I think it was the counselor and then the janitor, because the janitor saw.
That's right. That's right. She does kill. Yeah, she does kill the teacher.
Yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of love for the counselor.
Yeah, that's right. She does kill that. But that's the point. Yeah, that's the point where she goes to the point of no return.
Yeah.
But I mean, considering the fact that she gets bit in the first third of the movie, that's an awful lot of restraint.
Right.
As far as gore and the storytelling goes. Like, I think other movies would have been more inclined to just start, you know, throwing blood on the walls as soon as they had the go.
I mean, she also rapes a guy. That guy wanted to stop.
Awkward.
Yeah.
I think actually he says, he doesn't really say stop. He says, I need protection. And then she goes at it.
I mean, he was definitely given the we need to slow down vibes.
That's true. Yeah.
Well, and he did say that he said something.
Oh, he said we should really slow down. And she said no. And he's like, who's the man here?
Right.
And that's kind of where that whole thing tipped over.
Right.
Yeah, I mean,
it's poor choice of words, you moron.
Right.
But he didn't deserve what happened to him.
No, even though he was a douche.
Even though he was like a douche canoe, correct?
He survives. I mean, he gets the cure.
Yeah.
He's going to be fine. And again, it's sort of that idea of, again, that the man, that he goes through the same arc for the most part, but his is sort of played for laughs, is sort of a, you know, a comparison, which is part of what makes this a very much a woman narrative.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of like double standards, I mean, I guess, yeah, you could make that argument. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. I blame the DayQuil. Talking about, but yeah, the like I said, folks, bear with me, please. And Sam, Jen, bear with me. Where was
it? Jen, how did you feel about the actual, you know, the actual body horror of it? You know, the slow transformation and the way that things happened before she became a puppet at the end.
The thing about puberty is that it usually comes in fits and starts. Certain parts get rearing, other parts not so much. They don't happen till later, and there's no real blueprint for how it's going to work out for you. And I think that I think they did a little bit of that, where like it was just, we're like at the beginning when they were really starting to get worried, there was just, you know, some, you know, weird hairs growing out of the scars that she had. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
the tail. And,
first of all, the tail. I'm trying not to mention the Hormel short.
Yeah. The tail. Oh, you're going to send her to the hide cellar? sorry, that was a riff tracks joke.
I wasn't going to do that.
That Hormel one? Yeah. I
remember. Yeah. Yeah.
That was tough.
I mean, that's horrifying.
Yeah. Yeah, speaking of body horror.
Yeah.
But yeah, like God,
the fact that they made it like look like baby skin and it wasn't furry at all made it even more gross. The tail.
The Hormel's thing or Ginger Snap?
No, the tail.
Yeah. No, Ginger Snap's tail, but also Hormel. The tail was like, again, and it was something that kind of showed up in small bits over a period of time.
Right.
Granted, it was only a couple of weeks because it was early October when this happened and they were counting down to Halloween. So I think that part of it, like where it was just like suddenly something appears or, you know, the one day, like apparently all her hormones get in action and she gets good hair.
Right. she gets her glow up finally.
She gets her slow motion walk through the hallway.
Right.
Yeah. So having all of that while having to hide a tail, you know.
Yeah.
I get it. There's a lot there. But also watching the like the final minute, like the final transformations of the werewolf with like the skin pulling and everything. It took its time and it did it right. I was pretty gross. I was pretty happy with it.
So you generally a fan of body horror?
Not really. Really, it freaks me out. Like that's the one that like gets me the most, is because it's so. I mean, because it's so visceral.
Right. And a lot of body horror movies are just about the body horror.
Are just gross to be gross and not gross and like. And
this one has a really great story.
That
it's using to tell it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was like.
I did notice on this run through that you know, for the male audience, of this film, everybody seems to focus on, you know, Catherine Isabel's glow up phase, where she's doing the slow motion, you know, hottie walk through the hall and everything. And, you know, she's a beautiful woman. I get it.
Sure.
But I noticed in this watch through that, you know, it's actually such a small amount of time where that works for her. And it's not, you know, something awful.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird that, you know, whenever anybody talks about or thinks about, you know, Ginger Snaps, they talk about, you know, how beautiful Catherine Isabel was in it, but they don't give credit to how much time she spent not being beautiful or being, you know, awkward at the beginning or showing, you know, this weird shit happening to her. And I think for a lot of actresses that's hard to do.
Yeah, it's hard to play ugly though.
Yeah,
you know, so many of us have to live with it every day. But you know, under all the grease paint and all bullshit, you know, they go through all of this, you know.
I mean, they show her
showing, you know,
they show her taping her tail to her leg, and that's not exactly
That was a two-person job.
At first.
But yeah, it's And to play it straight, not try to play it like comedy.
Or when, you know, they start to show like how her torso is changing. They start it off like it's going to be a sexy thing. And then, you know, hey, look at those wolf tits, you know.
Right.
And she's got like eight of them, you know, and it doesn't look nice at all.
It's definitely like her skin definitely does take on like a gray and like wrinkled appearance. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
trying to figure out what like the forehead
thing,
the forebrow.
I look good on her though. I mean, it looks cool.
Well, there you go.
But she had like the wolf eyes that had the little fold over, you know, at the ends and everything. That was kind of neat.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. I think that a lot of people focus on, I mean, it's like I said at the beginning, like a lot of people focus on the body transformation element, the you know, this is metaphor for female puberty, and doesn't really think about the other stuff that's going on in this movie. Like,
it's two friends growing apart.
Right. Two very close people who are growing apart, or rather finding who they really are and who they really are or not. Each other, right. You know, it's so much, and again, so much. It's a like we were talking about with Candyman, the kind of the idea of like the mimetic, metafictional perception of a film versus what's really going on in the film. Are you blinking? By the way, is there red blinking? Or am I?
No, it's just trying to. It's the camera doesn't know what light setting it wants.
Okay.
To be on.
All right. I'm like, am I having a stroke? Okay.
No, it's sorry. It's not the Dayquil.
You can't see that.
I hope that's
you
not toast that burning.
Yeah. I can't, you can't see that at home, folks, but there's like blinking going on Sam's camera side. And I'm like, oh shit, am I going insane?
Damn it, or what? Sammy.
But yeah, like, you know, everybody's talking about, Ginger turning, that the idea is that everybody thinks of this movie is about Ginger.
Right.
And in many ways, it's about Bridget.
Yeah,
she's the lead. You know, Bridget is our protagonist. Ginger is our antagonist. It just, the story spends so much time talking about Ginger's transformation that it's overshadowing Bridget's transformation from adolescent to adulthood or young adult.
To be fair, that's her whole. That's how her relationship with Ginger's always been.
Exactly. Right.
It's always been Ginger and then.
Her. That's the metafictional aspect of the film where it's like it is literally overshadowing her because Ginger always overshadowed her.
Right.
And Bridget Bridget's overcoming that to a degree.
Her rejecting it. It's she finally starts to reject it. That, you know, her life shouldn't be in service to her, but you know, she should actually be her own person.
Wait, Ginger gives her the opportunity. Ginger says, right. I'll make you like me and we'll both be werewolves. And Bridget says, because that will allow you to once again overshadow me.
Right.
As I said earlier, I made a suicide pact. You said you'd die with me because you had nothing better to do.
Right.
It's a very important line that really struck me, even in the Dayquil haze I had last night. I was like, oh, that's really meaningful.
Yeah.
This is Bridget's moment of being like, I could take the easy way out and just go with you, but I'm not.
And that sort of thing has always hit me closer to home and hit me harder than the standard, you know, coming of age story where you have to defeat a monster or get fucked before prom or whatever the hell, you know, coming of age story is.
Yeah.
The first time you kissed a girl, like the ones that really strike me is the ones where, you know, the people you knew when you were younger and grew up with, like, aren't your kind of people anymore. Or, you know, you're changing to be different than them. Or
you have to make the hard choice.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Where, you know, even if it is, you know, this is obviously a little different than just growing apart because, you know, there's that aspect of Bridget, you know, realizing that she's being used by Ginger and always kind of has been in a way. But there, you know, it's like speaks to the sadness of growing up and like growing apart from people and just realizing that you can't, you know, walk the road together anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Eventually you realize, I mean, I've had friends that, you know, were very much like Ginger where I was like, you know, this relationship defines me. You know, one of the guys I would have called my best friend. I remember actually having a conversation with a guy. He went on a comedy tour. I don't want to say his name. On a comedy tour with another guy. I ran into the other guy after the comedy tour and the other guy told me, get away from him.
Right.
And I said, what do you mean? And he's like, you don't need him. You do not need him. And I was like, it was a really hard thing to hear, but he was right. Mm-hmm. He's like, you know, you're he's made you into his little buddy. You don't need that. You know, you are strong enough on your own to go, you know, to so.
But even if there's not a reason for it, I mean, you know, even if, you know, it's not it's a toxic relationship, this is a toxic relationship.
Yes.
And, you know, obviously the power dynamic is such where Ginger is the dominant one in that relationship. Like, I feel like even if the roles were reversed, it would still be a toxic relationship. Because, you know,
if there's, no, if there's Bridget, not an equal access to power, then there's...
Well, I'm saying even if Bridget was the one in charge of the relationship, it would still be a negative relationship because, you know, all she wants at the beginning of this movie is to be an outcast and die. And that's not healthy, you know?
Right.
I mean,
I was going to say, don't call out my high school like 4 years like that.
I call out my high school experience every week. You know, you're on this show now, and I'll call out yours for 1 week, okay?
that's an important thing to note too, that they talk about in this movie. Bridget and Ginger both are late bloomers,
right?
They it's
physically and metaphorically
they're kind of outcasts by choice, but it's because they haven't become like everybody else that they feel like that's the sort of the thing they need to be.
And I think they are outcasts by choice because they don't come from the poor side of town.
No,
they come from the same ridiculously expensive, you know, I don't know if it's a gated community, but it definitely feels like a planned community where houses in 2000 were $175,000. That was the starting price.
Right. Yeah. Well, nowadays, again, we don't know what land prices in Canada are.
It was definitely lower than that, probably for, you know.
Well, they buy things in like acorns or something, right?
I mean, yeah, I think they do. No, it's maple leaves.
Three moose heads.
Yeah, maple leaves.
Three acorns to a moose head. Three moose heads to a Mountie.
Labatt Blue. Yeah. Sorry, Canada. Sorry, Canada.
We love you, Canada.
We love you, Canada.
Give us your free healthcare.
Yeah, and honestly, we'd probably move there if we had the choice. But yeah, I mean, it's also like everybody talks about Catherine Isabel being beautiful, and we're going to pretend Emily Perkins isn't.
Like, I've always been Team Emily Perkins.
Right? Like, I mean, she's very, very pretty in this movie. And again, like Jen talked about,
Catherine Isabel, it has an easy sort of beauty where it's always there and you can count on it, even though they had her where she didn't brush her hair that one day.
Right.
Whereas Emily Perkins' character changes so much throughout this movie that it takes place in her features, even though she doesn't have a large physical transformation.
And she's so good at playing, you know, that kind of mousy, you know, scarred character that, you know, between the 1990 It and this, I probably spent a lot of time thinking that was who Emily Perkins is. Mm-hmm. And she's not. But she's just really good at playing that kind of role.
Yeah. I mean, Emily Perkins is a very pretty young lady, and they put and they make her mousy and dumpy, and she gives that whole like Carrie White, you know, droopy shoulder thing. But you know, again, it's one of those things that, again, like you're talking about, Sam, like the idea of, like, everybody thinks about Catherine Isabel when Ginger snaps. Where a lot's going on with Bridget, a lot's going on with Emily Perkins in this movie,
and it's really her story.
It's really her
altogether.
Yeah.
One thing I did want to note that I loved that they had this, and it's kind of just like a little note that I think just speaks to them thinking out aspects that aren't actually dialogue or script, is they had that one, I don't know if it was like a jacket or like a sweater that looked like it was made of like gray fur. And they kept like going back and forth with who was wearing it throughout the film. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a scene where like Catherine Isabel was wearing it. Like, Emily Perkins wore it most of the time.
Yeah.
Which is funny because it looks like it's a wolf fur coat, and she's the one wearing it when the other person's actually turning into a werewolf, and she wears it till the end when
she's like, well, I'm a wolf wear.
Right. take a lap.
D&D I'm gonna joke. Do that. That's fine.
That was a Samael level joke. I'm sorry.
You are welcome.
I enjoy Dungeons and Dragons jokes, so if that's what it was, wolf wears or Dungeons and Dragons monster. I don't know. Anyway, yeah.
Oh, dead air. All right.
But yeah, yeah. So, what else with Ginger snaps? What?
I learned how easy it is to kick through drywall. That was nice.
As long as you don't hit the stud. Yeah.
I never really thought about it until she was doing it. I'm like, good for you.
Yeah, she's smart. I mean, a lot of people just see a wall and I can't get through there. But, you know, you can Kool-Aid man your way through things that you don't think they can.
Oh, no.
Well, I mean, you put me in a room with a werewolf, I'll find a way out of it. You
know? Sure. I mean, it's obviously not like the first best choice.
Yeah. All right, but Sam, you made a joke earlier about her turning into a puppet. Mm-hmm. What do we think about the werewolf effects in this movie?
I think throughout the movie, they're really well done and really well utilized, well shot. The director of this, and I didn't look up the cinematographer, did a bunch of like episodes of Xena.
Okay.
I noticed that because at the end credits, they thanked Lucy Lawless and Rob Tapert. And I'm like, why is that? And I'm like, they got to have worked on Xena.
Hmm.
Which, you know, is, it's an iffy show.
It's a great place to learn how to do big things with small money.
The craft is there. And it's like, it was like a training camp for, you know, so many people. And I think it shows on screen because, Xena had a small budget, even for the time.
Yeah.
Hercules as well. And whatever other spinoffs there were, but they pulled it off every week where it looked like a good, you know, action movie with monsters and stuff like that. And I think, you know, that they shot it well. The puppet at the end, I shouldn't say the final transformation just doesn't work for me personally, but it's not anything to do with how they shot it or edited it.
I know the first time I saw the werewolf, I'm like, nope, right. I don't believe that this is the correct way to go. But I think as the rest of the movie continued and you saw like flashes of it and stuff, you were like more prepared for what it was going to look like.
I just think the face was a little, it wasn't expressive enough. It wasn't as expressive as maybe it should have been. It was expressive. It wasn't like, you know, static, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do remember watching when I was watching it being like, how much of this is still Ginger?
Right.
They
did inoculate against it very well by showing, you know, was it Howling, the marsupials issue of the Howling or whatever, the Howling 6 or whatever was the movie they were watching.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it worked.
I don't think it didn't work. I just thought it could have been better.
Sure.
I mean, I was so invested at that point in the film that, you know, you could have done almost anything. You could have literally had a sock puppet go rar on the screen. I'd be like, yes, I'm into this.
I was going to say, the level of tension at that point forgives a lot of sense.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
And then what do you think about the effects of the actual...
Like I said, the body horror accidents were good. It was hard to see Ginger in the final phase.
Yeah.
Which, granted, that's something that she's been kind of losing in the last, you know, 10 or 15 minutes of the film. But you'd think there'd be a little bit more. I mean, I don't know how you do that with a puppet, but it was just a spirit that I didn't think was there. But I mean, otherwise it looked good.
I feel like if they could have spent more money on the puppet, it would have taken away from somewhere else in the story too.
Right.
So it was probably wise to not spend all the money on the final Ginger and instead have these, you know, consistently good effects.
And it's a guy in a suit. With an animatronic face. You practical effects nerds,
that's the other thing. This was 2000, you know, if they wanted to, they could have given you a CGI werewolf and it literally looked terrible.
More than likely. Yeah. They don't usually work very well.
I'm a fan of the practical effect. Right. I'm not going to lie.
I'm just saying, cause 2000, you know, on a budget is not usually a very good effect.
Hey, they didn't use sound footage. I was ecstatic about that. Right.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't think anybody's not a fan of practical effects, but yeah, I mean...
There are some people.
I'm sure there are. I'd
rather see the CGI. Yeah. They're not people that I, you know, have hold truck with, but they are out there.
George Lucas did it best. I think that it works. I think that the werewolf looks pretty good. It's at least unique. I like the lack of hair. I get to get this big fleshy creature.
Like it's a mole rat.
Yeah. It kind of makes it look grosser in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a much more, in fact, it makes a sort of weird sense of a human turning into a wolf. It's mostly skin.
The wolf at the beginning had hair too.
Well, so did Ginger.
Yeah.
I mean,
so I'm saying like the one that attacked her was fully.
she may not have been fully transformed at that point. True. We don't know if that's like, I mean, that's the last part we saw. We didn't you know,
we didn't see
later what it looked like.
We didn't see much of the werewolf that attacked her. For the best.
Shot very well.
That attack scene is very, very dizzying and disorienting. It's a very, very good attack scene.
And the acting's on point, because it could be real easy to go too far over the top of the screaming, but neither really did, you know?
So this movie ended up spawning two sequels.
Which I barely remember.
I like the third one. Everybody makes fun of the third one. I like the third one. But that's the one.
Oh, that was the 1300s or whatever.
It was like someone took Ginger Snaps and Ravenous and like tossed it.
Right, put them together.
Yeah.
We got a weekend pass to Colonial Williamsburg and the camera, so let's do that.
Right. They put those two movies in the pod from The Fly, and it came out, and it was
like, if you're going to ask me how I feel about either of them, I haven't seen either of them in a very long time. I don't have much of an opinion.
I haven't seen two in a long time. Right. Normally I go back and watch three, because I actually think I like it better than the first one. There's just something cool about it. I enjoy it. Even though it kind of undercuts the ending of the first one, the third one kind of involves them, like, you know, high fiving, you know, in werewolf, like they're kind of like, like Bridget just says like, okay, then we'll be werewolves together.
I think the second one was an interesting take on the concept, with, you know, her being, you know, basically on the run and basically, you know, being thought to be addicted to drugs, when actually she's just, you know, trying to keep her lycanthropy at bay. And that was a cool idea.
Yeah. Didn't that have the retcon though? She has the cure in her hand in the first one.
Right.
I don't know. I can't remember if they
had. Well, they didn't establish that it was the cure. For sure.
Well, yes, they did. She cured the kid, the guy with it.
We don't know if that's a temporary or permanent solution.
Yes. Yeah.
He was still had all the acne and stuff. He just, his mind cleared.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, it's, obviously that's what they were shooting for in the first film, but it's not.
But always the first film is never made with a sequel in mind. Yeah.
Right. Definitely this one wasn't. I mean, I don't think.
Can't be. Yeah. This movie was made for so little money. There was no way they could have guaranteed a sequel for this movie. All right. Any last thoughts on Ginger Snaps?
Jen, what do you?
5 out of 4 stars.
5 out of 4.
Must recommend. If it's not the worst thing you ever did with 2 hours.
Yeah. I was just thinking that this one would actually make a pretty decent double feature. If you want two aspects of a double feature that feel completely different but are thematically similar, watch it with The Witch.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a cool double feature.
You could do that.
Because that's another one about, you know, puberty and shittiness.
And you know what?
The horror that comes with it.
Watch Heathers too. That's a great movie.
Yeah, Heathers is awesome.
Yeah. You could do it with Heathers for sure. Yeah.
How about you?
I like Ginger Snaps. I'm not a huge fan of it. I think it's a perfectly fine film, but this is a movie that if this episode weren't happening, I probably wouldn't have watched it again. Right. Which is fine. It's what this is about. But I enjoyed it more than I thought I would watching it again. I was like, oh yeah, this is actually a pretty clever movie. I will say that its low budget definitely shows, I think. I noticed particularly the music is really cheesy and generic. And I was like, oh well, it's a teen movie made in Canada in 2000 with no money, so it makes sense.
Right. You're talking about the soundtrack or the score?
Yeah, the music. Yeah, like more or less the soundtrack, but also kind of the score. I mean, like, you know, there's a lot of like cheesy kind of like guitar
stuff
happening during a lot of scenes, and like,
you know, it's got a lot of that early new metal in it and stuff like that. Although it does have two tracks by one of my favorite bands, Fear Factory, so that's kind of cool.
Is it really?
Yeah, they played Demanufacture during the field fight where they're punching the shit out of that girl.
Oh, okay.
They're like, I had to go back because I'm like, was that Fear Factory just now?
The only Fear Factory album I ever heard was Obsolete.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it had like it was like a concept album. It was fun.
Yeah, most of theirs are
Are they really? Okay.
Most of them are concept albums. Most of them are the same concept album where it's machines have taken over the world. We need to stop this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I have become a tyrant.
We can do a track by track replay of that if you want right now.
I haven't heard it in freaking years, man. I should try that again. That was a good record. Yes, I call them records because I'm 40. Mm-hmm.
You didn't call it a single.
What's the title track? So with that, Jen, thank you for being on finally.
Yes, thank you so much.
The longest way.
We should have done this last year, but we didn't, and I apologize for that. When we talked about what we're doing this month, I'm like, let's finally keep that promise to Jen, and we'll do Ginger Stamps. So thank you so much for being on. Long overdue. You've been on some of our specials, and it's been fun talking with you.
Very cool.
Okay. Ginger Snaps. That was what was I saying? Dayquil.
Dayquil.
I think that's the theme of today's episode.
That's really? The theme of today's episode. My head is starting to hurt. Thank you very much for bearing with me, guys. And thank you at home for listening. We remind you, as always, to keep it positive, keep it constructive. Love yourself, love your fellow horror fans. Love your Bridgets. Be nice to that Bridget girl at school. If you're a high school kid listening to this, which hopefully you're not, because your mom and dad probably will be mad at you. I don't know. With that, we'll say thank you very much. Good night and namaste.